this engine of learning you're speaking of is so much to do with self-leadership as well, because if I don't practice it with myself, it's not going to be effective with others because they won't feel the truth of it. So looking at that, it's each day, as you were saying, you know, each day before going to bed, then again when waking up, what went well? What was optimal? What was suboptimal? Where can corrections be made?
Throughout history, the great questions have been asked, and great research has been undertaken, always expanding the territory of the known by shining a light into the unknown. Where is that cutting edge today? And can a community of people from all over the world, each carrying their own unique journey of discovery, come together to inquire at the edge of purposeful evolution through conversation? At Portals of Perception, we think it is possible, and we hope that you will choose to be a part of this exploration.
In this exchange, we are exploring the wide arena of leadership and reaching out to sense its emergent nature in our lives at this time. We sense that leadership is not something out there, but rather it is right here in how we choose to live every day in the various circumstances and roles we operate in. We are not inviting you to a certain method or methodology of leadership, but rather into the bigger inquiry of how we can each, individually and collectively, lead a life of meaning and purpose, a life of learning and development and growth. Join Aviv Shahar for Leadership as an Agency of Assistance and Easement.
Welcome to this Portals of Perception Discovery Conversation, where we sense with a group of friends the arena of leadership. We explore the arena of leadership. We sense into its emergent nature in our lives at this time as we are each experiencing the changes that are occurring in the world and in our lives, and the sense of how leadership is not something out there, but rather it is right here in how we choose to live every day in the various circumstances and roles that we operate in. You're about to join a conversation where we go all over the place through the various experiences, professional and personal, in our lives, because we are not inviting you to a certain method or methodology of leadership, but rather into the inquiry, the bigger inquiry of how can we each individually and collectively lead a life of meaning, a life of purpose, a life of learning and development and growth. Enjoy the discovery along with us in this exploration. We are exploring how we humans are finding ourselves anew through these times of change. And inside this inquiry, the metaphor or the mental model that we gravitate to is the idea of an operating system update. This frame proposes that there are certain elements of our humanity that carried us through the ages and that are still essential going forward. As an example, our capacity to learn and develop, our capacity to share and collaborate. These were elements of the old operating system, and they're being revitalized in a whole new way in the new operating system that is emerging at this time through crisis and discovery and change. This metaphor of an operating system update also brings to the foreground the realizations that there are elements that have no business in the future and are not part of the update. If we as humanity manage to not blow this place up and manage to make it actually works for the future, we can talk about elements like cruelty and oppressive subjugation and so on. Today, in this conversation, we bring indeed the focus to the leadership conundrum. And again, not so much in the way we look at leadership in the world, in the sense of political leadership or business leadership or any other leadership on the world stage, not because these are not important. They're actually very important. So we're not excluding those dimensions. Rather, we come from the side door or from the back door, more into the core inquiry of leading as a core element of living. How do we lead our lives as individuals, as networks of people, as communities, in the various situations that we get to participate and engage? So let me begin by asking you to introduce yourself and to offer a first response to a rather simple question, which is, what comes alive for you when you hear the phrase leadership as an agency of assistance and easement?
Hello, everyone. I'm Theodora Papanastasiadou from Greece. I've been an educator for 40 years. In the last 30 years, I'm working as a teacher in the high school, public school, which offers a vast range of beautiful experiences. And about the question, the first location for me is that each human is unique. Our fingerprint is unique. Our iris in the eye is unique. And therefore, each one is allowed and should be permitted to find their uniqueness, to be able to locate, to understand, to learn, to know who they are and what they can offer from themselves that is completely their own. And it is a contribution to the whole, to their community, to their country, to their time. And I think this is a part of the quest of many young people today that I'm meeting, to ask, who am I and what can I do? Not because someone tells me, but because it's my human rights, in a way, to explore it in their own way.
So yes, so leadership is a facility and assistance for people to discover who they are and what they're about as they grow through their education years and beyond.
My name is Perry. In my life, I've been a coach and captain of sports teams. I also own a business and have to teach people how to do certain things, even if it's as simple as how to shovel dirt or move a wheelbarrow in a landscaping business. And you find that in seeing a need, you are caused to offer assistance, but you need to have the need that you see in order to offer any assistance, which is a leadership. And when you start to see that someone has a unique way of moving a tool, you have to kind of hold your, I find myself holding back a bit to try to find what is the best way for that person to do this unique thing, because each person does it in their own way. And when you first proposed this question, Avi, I thought of a child first and how it takes the first step. And mommy or daddy comes up to them and wants to hold them. But eventually the child will say, no, mommy, I can do it myself. And that moment, the child becomes its own leader. And the mother leads by holding back and allowing that to happen. Now, this training happens to us very young. Not always, and often we don't see it being carried forth into the future because of training and school and things that kind of root that idea out of us. But I'd like you to think today, whoever's watching this, is that what would leadership be for you walking through a park? And for me, it would be thinking, what is it that you see that needs to be done that you decide not to leave it for others? It could be anything, a lost dog, some trash on a place that you know disturbs the sense of that space. How, if you want to be a leader, you have to practice it in small ways, often, for it to live with you.
Indeed. So leadership is seeing, recognizing the need, and finding a way to respond to the need, or being called to respond to the need in whatever way you see fit, including deciding that it's for you to do and to respond to, because unless you do, nobody else will.
Hi, all. This is Jane Goodman. And I would say that leadership has been part of my life since childhood, finding myself there, never seeking it. And since then, I have, whether it's been heading up different projects to owning businesses and having staff, employees, people I work alongside with, to being part of a residential community and overseeing that, to I can go on and on. It seems that it keeps finding me. So that's where I would start with introducing myself, as well as being a mother and a grandmother. So there's multiple angles of leadership that can be approached here. And when I look at, Aviv, your question, and I'm looking at it to do with as an agency of assistance and easement, we'll put in perhaps two or three different points here. One to do with being a mother or a parent, and that sense of the responsibility of assisting those youth, the child, in becoming independent. And part of independence is to be able to think for oneself, to be able to be fine with making mistakes, and to know that it's a lifelong journey. So inside of that, the core principles are part of easement and assistance inside of leadership, because each has their own natures, they're of a children or people, it doesn't matter. Each has their own natures, their own styles, their own ways, their own speeds and timings. And the easement in that is actually my own self-leadership, to be able to be watchful, to be listening, to be observing all the time, to know when to step back, when to step forward. Then to add in to do with engaging with other adults in leadership functions, it's very much that agency of assistance and easement is in mentoring, in making space for them to find their own leadership in themselves and to know of oneself more. Once again, inside of whether it's a project or a life in their own journey, what are their core beliefs, and assisting them in finding them and living them.
Yes, leadership is an agency of assistance for people to grow throughout their entire journey, always at a new stage in the discovery of who they are and what they can do and become.
Hi, my name is Liz Halter, and my experience in leadership covers a range of activities. On the one hand, as a co-worker, being a senior engineer, people look to me for guidance and collaboration and project leadership, to being a good neighbor and being on a board of directors for the HOA, being a center leader in a meditation center, and other volunteer positions like that. So you asked the question about what excites us about leadership as an agency of assistance and easement. Well, that excites me because that makes those roles and those tasks actually enjoyable, because otherwise, if that's not what it's about, if what you're about isn't really about humans and human life, you know, bringing life to whatever situation the involvement is with, then it becomes, you know, just a task, a job, which takes the joy out of it. So this really makes it something worthwhile.
Yes, so leadership is a bringer and the bringing of life. And as an agency where something that a moment earlier was routine or a chore becomes animated with possibility that attracts and inspires. All that you're offering, Liz, is part of leadership. Well, so let me ask you further and let's build on this, because the premise of why we are in this conversation today is that if you lived in the 4th century or the 10th or the 11th century, well, and as a simple person, well, leadership was more than anything about survival. It was about finding food. It was about finding a way to protect your family, perhaps, and staying alive for another day. Now, it is true that in many situations, even now, we have entered the third decade of the 21st century, in many places around the world, these still are central elements of leading a life. Still, I would propose that this world has become so much more complex. There are so many facets and additional dimensions to navigating life. And the intricacies and the complexities that these facets bring makes it that to lead a life as an individual, as a family, as a community of human beings, we're trying to endeavor to do something together. All of it is so much more nuanced, so much more complex. And so let me ask you in a concrete way, what have you experienced and how have you experienced leadership in yourself, in even specifically in recent times, both in terms of how you have experienced leadership in yourself and what you have seen from others around you, please?
You're saying leadership in ourselves. Are you talking about self-leadership or us leading?
You are simply framing there, perhaps, a central element of leadership and the premise of leadership at this time, which is that any leadership, much more so than in the context of merely survival, where you needed to congregate with few others and it was, could your tribe be stronger than the other tribe? We are now sensing and exploring leadership in a whole other different way, where the premise begins with leadership from the inside, leading oneself. And if I am effective in leading myself, I may have a better facility in offering that service and that assistance to others. So, yes.
Well, if I could make an attempt, as every human is unique, so is every situation, which means, in relation to what one of our friends here said before, every situation has different needs. So one of the places to begin is to be sensitive and listening and try to understand what is a need of a situation. One of the things that I have found great value in is to locate the sentiment or the wish or the intention that everyone will succeed. So I'm saying this as a deep sentiment inside. Many people that want to help others, that we don't want to impose upon anyone. If anything, we would like to see the other person blossom, find their charismas, discover new combinations of capabilities in them, go deeper in themselves. I'm also talking a bit about the method of Socrates, as we all know, the obstetrics, which was the idea that you can discover the truth with someone by asking them questions, the right timing, the right question to extract the truth that is inside each one, and together build a perception, a format of understanding, which is the birth of philosophy, to love wisdom, the discovery of those times, which still sometimes is valid now. So this sentiment, this wish to help others to succeed, even at what would appear at the cost of oneself, like sometimes doing things which are risky or sometimes doing things which are new or that could make you feel uncomfortable or others may not understand where you're coming from, sometimes using humor, sometimes taking the blame in a situation, simply so that another can have a chance to discover what is next for them. So for me, these are very moving things. And It can be in a family, in a classroom, in a dialogue with your husband or your wife, in the human exchanges.
And you're offering the Theodora a range of deep natures that are all part of the leadership process. Let me just capture a few of those. First, you went back to that core deep idea, which is identifying a need. And you're saying, if I am to be able to identify a need, I need to observe, I need to listen, I need to pay attention, I need to make the space to see and recognize the need. And then I need to think, what is the best way to serve the need? And then you secondly explore this idea of leadership as a sentiment, as a generation, as a generative sentiment. It's not just the idea that the leader is the person that stands in front of the room or is speaking. It's sometime in what you're offering, the person that is in the back of the room or in the side of the room, who is seeing somebody that no one else will see, and they sometime will practically offer their hand. And often it won't even be that. It would be that they will offer their thoughts and will make the mental space and the, if you like, the energetic space for that person to bring forward their best and to succeed. So we are beginning to sense here with this example how leadership has so many invisible and nuanced dimensions, so much broader than the narrower context that we will often associate with leadership.
I want to bring in, Aviv, another idea I think is important alongside this inner, what comes out of us inside. And it's in business, I noticed over time that I learned by what I did wrong. I learned by what it cost me to do things wrong. And it was something that is still very difficult to teach people who work for you, how to learn from your mistakes. And the word leadership is interesting because it says leadership in a flotilla. And the leadership gets to be the leadership, the lead captain, because he's got a good compass. He knows the way. He knows where the trouble is. He doesn't have to tell everybody where it is. He just takes you through it. You don't even know it. So a lot of leadership can be totally not seen. It can be in your personal way of going on. It can be that people feel safe with you, that you're going to make the right decisions. And I think for business, that's true for a CEO or a leader, that they'll take the company in a positive direction. You won't know how they do it, but that experience will allow it to happen. So we become made better leaders by living if we learn from our mistakes. And I want to add just importantly that just learning what not to do. And sometimes it comes at great cost. I was thinking, you know, I had many friends that went into the Vietnam War, and the ones that survived and learned what not to do, they learned where the footfalls were, where the traps were, all these things. And new recruits would come in, and the leaders for them would be the veterans, the ones that could tell them. They wouldn't be the captains, lieutenants, the majors. They'd be those soldiers that still were with them that have already been through the journey, been down that road before. And there's a lot to be said for that, that the wisdom of our forefathers, our grandparents, those that have a lot to offer about how to live in this earth.
So both learning in the long arc of life and experience, and also learning through the daily act of living. In some way you provided me with an entry to share this with you. As you may be aware of I've been working and helping leadership teams in some of the most admired companies in the world over the last two decades. And often when I am with a group of executives for a 3 or 4 days workshop, what you just spoke to there is part of how I introduce the entire process, because I describe the core impulse of that coaching and consulting work that I do with leadership teams to center around the inquiry, which I frame as what enables a group of people to produce truly profound breakthrough results. And I share that part of the genesis of this inquiry is that I've had a profound discovery, profound observation for me at the time, earlier in life, a little after I left the Air Force, where I saw that if you brought together around the table very smart people, very bright people, they were perfectly capable, exactly as any other group, in creating collective stupidity rather than collective wisdom. And I asked, why was that the case? What could be the reasons as to why you have around the table a group of brilliant people and the sum total of what they would produce will still be, in some cases, disastrous? And I became very interested and deeply forensic in my inquiry. And the summation, the kernel of the insight is that to answer the question as to what differentiates some teams from other teams, as to why they are able to escape collective stupidity and truly unlock collective wisdom, the answer to that involves lifting this word we use so much from a pedestrian level to a profound level. And the word is learning, that we use learning all the time. But what I observed was that teams that were truly able to unlock the power of collective wisdom, they became more interested in learning and developing and improving each and every one and as a collective than playing to their egos. And so they learn to play to each other's strength. And they learn to put success, the collective win, over and above the individual win. And they learn to place that value over and above the ego of each and every person. And in that mechanism, in that process, in that passion, learning becomes, if you like, the spiritual impulse of a successful team, whether in sports, whether it's in business, because we wake up every morning and we say, okay, yesterday was great, but let's debrief because there were a few elements that we did not address in the best, most optimal way. So can we discover what worked well? Where did we not follow the best, most optimal path? How will we therefore approach it differently today? And ultimately, how will we show up as a team better, more effective, more collaborative, whatever the need is? So that engine of learning is a daily and weekly endeavor I recognize to be the engine of team success, team development, team leadership. Which brings me back to ask you to offer other observations you have seen in terms of what enables you, what enables people that you work with, what enable people you see around you to promote and facilitate the best in themselves and in others, or any other aspect of leadership that you have observed.
Well, I'd like to say something, particularly in response to what you were just pointing out, this, you know, drive to learn and to be better. I think that begins with an inner leadership that says, I'm okay as I am. It's a place to start. And other people are okay where they are. I think one of the first phases of my leadership in work came when I could say to myself, I don't understand this. I'm supposed to do this job. I'm supposed to do it this way, and I don't understand it. And from there, then being able to express in meetings, I don't understand that. Could you please go over that again? Now, you know, in a corporate world of engineers, that is not favored. Let's just say that one. It's not a favorite thing to say in one of those meetings, but it catches on. And then when it catches on, then everybody learns a lot more. Then everybody feels free to say that. Now everybody is learning something they didn't know before. We're finding out where our gaps are before we begin, not after we've already made the mistakes. And so, you know, you're talking about the inner leadership. And I think that that's where a lot of that starts, is kind of recognizing and allowing oneself to be where you are. But knowing that you know, you can improve from there. You want to learn, you want to go from there, but not having this overriding ego restriction that pervades everything.
Well, so the beauty of what you're offering, Liz, is what can perhaps be described as leadership as radical honesty and transparency. And which, by the way, whatever I was describing about the learning engine for a team, unless somebody is at the table with that degree of honesty and radical transparency, we are basically bullshitting each other, and we cannot actually create and unlock that true learning potential. Because we are, as we all know, I've seen it in some of the most successful companies in the world, where people spend too much of their energy and time on defending and protecting and covering and hiding. The psychic exhaustion and the energy consumption on those behaviors take away from the potential to unlock how we can learn, how we can improve, how we can grow. And the second practice that you highlighted is leadership by inquiry. Because when you are at the table and you are prepared to frame an inquiry and say, can you go through this one more time? Explain it even slower so we can all understand. You just gave us all permission to ask, to inquire. That's leadership.
And it's a relief as well.
It's a relief. Well, so there you are. You're describing also leadership as a relief, leadership as a release of tension, leadership as a way of disarming and removing blockages. These are all facets of leadership, part of the algorithm, part of the operating system that we are exploring in terms of what leadership is. Removing blockages is part of that. Inviting people to discover their capacity and how they can contribute is part of that.
This engine of learning you're speaking of is so much to do with self-leadership as well, because if I don't practice it with myself, it's not going to be effective with others because they won't feel the truth of it. So looking at that, it's each day, as you were saying, you know, each day before going to bed, then again, when waking up, what went well? What was optimal? What was suboptimal? Where can corrections be made? And it really touches upon, I find, in the self-leadership respect, to do with one's own patterns and psychologies, blockages. So I want to bring one up that no one likes to talk about. Yet I find for me, you know, it works for me. And that is to do with competition. Because what we're speaking about can't happen if I'm competing because I don't have that sense of self-worth, or I don't have the confidence, or I feel the ego wants to take over, let's say. So there's that self-competition, you can call it, which is healthy. That's where the learning happens. That's where the explorations happens. That's where I can say, oh, Aviv, I made a mistake. Or I can apologize for something I did that really isn't the standard I'd want to uphold. And these are examples that if you can be alive and vulnerable with other people, it's a type of leadership. Because you're showing them they don't have to put on airs, and that the task at hand, whether it be the relationship between two people or it be a project, is as important as what the end result will be, if not more important, that process between people, because that process inducts more intelligence that's needed to solve a problem, to find new ways.
With your comment about competition, because some people will say, well, hold on a minute, I do well and I thrive best when actually there is a competitive environment. And I often would think about Michael Phelps putting in his room on the wall the picture of his competitor, Ryan Lochte, as a way to continue to excel. I think, Jane, the distinction you're making is how when the competition locks you in being focused on the other person as a way that distances you from you, you lose the capacity to access your unique strength. Because ultimately, even in a competitive environment in the sports arena, how we bring up the best in each other is we will look at each other, we will learn, we will even compete. The way to engage competition in a constructive way is to unlock your inner potential. If you get obsessed with the other person, if you are grounded with the reason in the Rio Olympics, I think this famous picture of another swimmer in the butterfly and he's behind Phelps and he's making his move and you can see that he's looking at Phelps. Phelps is not looking at anybody. He's just looking straight ahead, right? He's so focused on himself, his body, his move. So that's an example of being very driven by the competitive arena in a way that drives you even deeper into yourself. Now, obviously, most of us are not operating in the Olympic arena at that level, but there is something in that metaphor that is perhaps relevant.
Yes. Well, I have that as a personal experience with competitive swimming, where I always wanted to beat my own scores, my own timing. And I remember in college that I had a teammates who got very upset with me because I was congratulating the person who beat me, who came in first and I came in second. And I had increased or decreased my timing and I felt really great. And I'm going, she helped move me on. She assisted me. And, you know, that's a whole other way of looking at it. But it's always about ourselves in that respect. And that sense of wanting to engage with people who will think out of the box, who will take something and try to look at it from all angles, because it stretches you, which is part of that self-development. And it's a healthy, you can say, competition with being with people who are brighter than you.
Indeed. The greatest way to accelerate one's learning is to place yourself with people who have experience you're seeking. Yes.
Well, to add to this discussion about competition is that it's directly opposed to collaboration. If there's competition, it's unlikely that in a team that there's going to be collaboration. And, you know, when we're speaking about leadership, we're speaking about our own self-leadership, but we're speaking about other people. So we do need to find the type of competition where we work to improve our own scores, but also not with each other in the way that we're going to shut down the collaboration that's possible.
Okay, so we do have here a nuanced conversation, interesting, about collaboration and competition and whether there are indeed a polarity or whether there is a way to integrate competition as part of the sports of collaboration. And we don't need to resolve the conundrum. We can live into that inquiry and explore whether we have been in circumstances and experiences where
part of the competitive spirit is an encouragement for you to bring forward your best, as Jane was describing in the swimming arena. These are different scenarios because swimming is, in this case, a solo sport unless you do the relay. And then there are the basketball or the soccer would be a team sport. But
I was saying that competition is good. There's nothing wrong with it. It's the word suggests competition, petition to be better, to find what I can do better. So what is sometimes unfortunate is what other people attach next to competition, like in order for you to be better, everyone else needs to be worse or lesser, or to put everyone down in your head so that you can win, which is not about competition. Competition is the spirit of trying and trying again and not giving up.
So the implicit in the big point you're making is in this idea of competition, the petition for us as a community of people to become better is that if
when we look at it purely in the sense of the one winner and the 19 losers, then that's where we get in our minds and in the way we deal with each other all wound up about you lost, rather than the win opportunity for everybody through the effort that was promoted in us. And you're saying it's not the competition that's wrong, it's the psychologies and what we attached to competition that becomes an arrestation for people.
Yes, and then in a way, no one would win in the end. But if we all feel good to play the game, to be in it, to participate, then competition is healthy. Competition gives, in a way, wings to the feet.
We went on a tangent here, and I want to get back to self-leadership and ask you about what are some of the practices and the ways and means and protocols that you apply, that you use on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, to discover the emergent version of yourself, the new you that you don't yet know, but rather that you are looking to discover.
One thing that's coming up in my mind in this relationship to this is sticking to my principles. And sometimes that's scary and threatening in particular situations. But if I can recognize that and sit with that and first of all, discover, well, why would it be threatening for me to stand up, stand out in this particular situation? Because I want to uphold my principle in this matter. And then I'm able to see what might be threatening. Then I can come up with possible ways of dealing with it rather than, say, a reactive way of dealing with it, or, you know, being more creative, taking more care, establishing rapport, laying the groundwork.
You are emphasizing again, Liz, the how central to self-leadership is the function of discernment, of being tethered to yourself, of being in touch with your principles and your values. Of, because we are forever in the arena with other people, we're forever pulled in all sorts of various directions. What you're describing is self-leadership, is being able to refine yourself time and again inside the cacophony of noise that pulls you in all sorts of other directions. That is leadership too. Because when you do so, you enable, first of all, yourself, and through that, you enable other people to, well, to discover that permission in themselves, to be themselves in the various circumstances that they operate in. What are we discovering here? We're discovering here that leadership is not a simple algorithm, that it has many, many, many different dimensions and facets. It is situational. It is sometimes personal. It is sometimes generational. All of those dimensions.
Yeah, well, I would say about an aspect of leadership, which is to do with pioneering into new opportunities. The key for me there has been and still is the decision making. That if I say I want to do this, and it has certain advantages and disadvantages and difficulties and opportunity, I need to decide if I want to do this, if I want to do this, and why. And then this is a building block, a center of gravity to come back to, especially when it's not so pleasant or it's not so comfortable or the outcome is not as expected. And then you need to keep trying. And I say it because this is one of the key features of a human potential, to make a decision and stick to it and then refine the ways and find new ways and then improve and learn and correct oneself. Like Perry was saying, learn from the mistakes. But so for me, this is a great freedom. It's a great freedom that I live in a place that I chose to. I married the man I chose to. I do the profession that I've chosen to. But this comes from first having explored the options, check this, check that, and then making the decisions. And I describe this because we had a conversation yesterday with a friend teacher, and she asked me, are you happy? And I said, well, and of course, this is self-leadership. I have led myself to pathways that I chose. So how can I not be happy? It doesn't mean the ultimate of happiness, which would involve the human race, the children of the world. But in this, I come back to what Liz was saying about principle. Because if I have chosen to work in education, then yes, sometimes I have to wake up at 6:30 in the morning and go in the rain to school and meet strange situations and sometimes unexpected. And the teenagers can be abrupt and unexpected and all kinds of things can happen. And then there's the parents. But I return that I chose to do this with value and with love. And the love of it is something that contagious and can teach people. And the love of it is also one of those things that never ends. You can find deeper and more and open with it.
Leadership is the decision to follow through with your choices and to find new layers and new dimensions of value and meaning and significance in those choices and go deeper in what they represent for you and embrace the challenge and the difficulty as actually part of the joy of living with the decisions you have made. It's what you're describing, Theodora, is a different ethos than leadership is. Self-leadership is choosing to, not even choosing, is doing at any moment in time what I feel like doing. You're describing a different kind of leadership ethos. It is the idea of following through with what I've decided was going to be important in my life. That's a core element of the self-leadership you're describing.
A successful life doesn't come without preparation. And I find certain practices that have come naturally to me in my life that have been very useful to bring me to where I am today. One of them is counting. I found at a young age, I counted everything. I had an affinity for math. I would count how many dogs were in a pack, count the birds that fly over, were there peculiarities, were there three of a kind, or was it seven of a kind? And I still do that to this day. It's like an ongoing practice that I don't control anymore. It's almost like a feature. And if you want to be fluid and able to change, don't be predictable. For me, I take a different route almost every day, even if it's three blocks down the road. I'll turn at a street I've never been on before. I'll try to keep presenting openings to new thought, new ideas, new knowledge, you might call it. And if I don't want to be stuck in the same old things, and I see in the world that we are changing, we're growing, there are new things. Our parents do not deal with the same things that we deal with today. And my grandchildren are teaching me how to use my phone. How many people own a smartphone that have ever looked at all the features that are in what you're doing? So versatility, if you want to be versatile, you've got to do things that make you more versatile. And these kind of practices would not be the same for each person. I've had to learn them, not by reading a book and taking them on, but by finding myself naturally doing something and then later finding that was really important for me.
Leadership is exploring a new path. Leadership is discovering a new route. Leadership is introducing novelty and new possibility. All these you're describing as part of your self-leadership operating system.
I think there's one more thing I can add, and certainly I'm alongside what has been said and value it greatly, is self-listening, that internal listening. And I'd say slowing down, listening to what is speaking, where it's coming from in me. And questioning, always questioning inside of that. An aspect of that is something might appear and I'll wait to see, does it come back tomorrow? Is it the same message I keep getting before responding? And some of that has to do with the aspect that was brought up earlier to do with leadership and safety. So an example in life is someone who is an emergency medical technician, EMT is what it's called in the States. When they come upon an accident, they don't rush in. They observe, they watch, they make sure all levels of it into where the accident is safe to proceed. And it's that sort of internal watchfulness and listening that I find helpful in self-leadership and in leadership in general.
So we have explored today in this brief conversation a multifaceted inquiry into leadership at this time. And we have taken leadership from the idea that where it is the leader, the CEO, the president, that persona at the top of a larger organization and brought it close in and inside into the idea of how do I choose to live a life? And how do we as people, as we come together, as families, as communities, as networks, how do we use our talents and capabilities to produce better results, to become more effective, to collaborate, and sometimes to compete and collaborate and discover as to whether those are indeed in conflict or not, including how do we learn individually and collectively together? Perhaps the salient learning for me in today is we're not seeking a one formula. We're not seeking one algorithm. We're seeking to describe some of the core elements, the core principles that anybody can pick up and develop their self-tailored, self-customized, designed leadership philosophy. And perhaps it's just right for this subject today because we are not trying to pretend or impart any five steps or seven principles. We're trying to invite you to the discovery of your own self-leadership in a world that is going through change, where you and your talent and your potential and your natural brilliance are important. And especially when you find your unique way to contribute to the circumstance you're in. Let that perhaps be the take-home value and the inspiration from our exploration today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Portals of Perception. If you're enjoying these dialogues, we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/portals. Visit portalsofperception.org for exclusive content. Please share this episode with a friend and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.